Well, hello and good Monday morning. Today is June 1st, 2020, and this is our Monday morning Bible study. So if you have your Bible, if you have your tablet, if you have your smartphone, if you have your, any method or means or medium through which you would like to study the Bible, grab that medium and go ahead and pause the audio. Read 1 Samuel chapter 29, read 1 Samuel chapter 29, and then after you've read the text, then go ahead and unpause your audio, and we are going to dive right into the text this morning. So here we are, we're in 1 Samuel chapter 29, and today, instead of doing the five W's, we're just going to go ahead and dive right into the text, and we're going to go through it verse by verse, because there are a couple issues that I want to talk about that I don't think the five W's is particularly conducive to. We're just going to start in verse 1. I know you already read the text, but it's always good to read the text, and then read it again, and then read it again, and then read it again. It's good to continually read the text. Here we are in 1 Samuel chapter 29, and we know that the Philistines have assembled their troops at Aphek, and Israel is camped at Jezreel. And there's this separation between the two armies, and Saul has already gone and visited the Witch of Endor. He has been told that he is going to die, and basically now what we have is a flashback. Okay, so it's really interesting the way this story is told. 1 Samuel doesn't seem to do that very often, but what we have here is kind of that sort of thing. We have a flashback. Now, exactly how far of a flashback is it? Not really sure. It's hard to say. But what we do know is that there is a flashback. So we have Saul, and we pick up Saul's story in chapter 28, okay? And we find out about Saul going to the Witch of Endor. And then we have a kind of a flashback in time. Now remember that this is, if you read this as though it's in chronological order, you're going to be really confused because it's not in chronological order. What you have is we find out about Saul, that there's kind of this alternation between David and Saul, David and Saul, David and Saul. And then we find out, we have something about David going over to Philistine country. And then we have the story of Saul and how Saul had gone and he had gone to be with the troops, and then he was confused because God wasn't answering him. So he went to the Witch of Endor, and he found out that, well, the Witch of Endor claimed to have brought up the prophet Samuel, and the spirit claiming to be the prophet Samuel says that Saul was going to die. He and his sons were going to die the next day. Okay, well, then we pick up with David's story in chapter 29, and we find out that, like, several days pass here in this process before the battle, or at least a day passes before the battle. Now, should we say that basically the events in chapter 28 and the events in chapter 29 happen in the same day? That's probably the best way to read that, is that these happen in the same day. I'm not 100% certain that they do, because what we see is in verse 11 that the Philistines, that David returned to the land of the Philistines, but the Philistines went up to Jezreel. That doesn't necessarily mean that they began the battle that day. It simply might mean that they were moving away from their initial encampment and they were moving towards Jezreel. I think timeline-wise, because of what happens in chapter 30, we have to say that David probably flashed back, the flashback in chapter 29 probably goes back 4 or 5 days. I'm not certain about that. I think you can make a good argument either way, but regardless, by the end of chapter 28, we have to flash back somewhat to get to chapter 29. And it's kind of cool that the Bible does that, by the way. Why am I making such a big deal about this? Why am I making such a big deal about whether or not there's a flashback? Well, because oftentimes we read the Bible and we assume that because of the way American histories are told, we come to expect that everything is going to be told in chronological order, and that if you see something, it always is following whatever precedes it in the narrative. But that's not the way this works. What happens is a lot of times in the Bible we have events that are happening in parallel. And I think that particularly in this place, we should expect to see these things being events in parallel. And I'll explain why in just a little bit. But we got to get into the text today. Okay, so the Philistines, they've assembled their troops. They're camped. The Israel is camped at Jezreel, and the leaders of the Philistines were having a review, and David and his men were passing in review as well. And the leaders of the Philistines, verse 3, say, what about these Hebrews? Okay, so remember, the Philistines are not, are a confederation, okay? There is not one overall king of the Philistines. There were five Philistine cities, and they were a confederacy. And they lived upon the coastline of Israel. And they kind of had a similar political system to the Greeks, like a city-state system, and it was a league or confederacy of these Philistine city-states, and every one of them had their own king. And the other four say to Achish, they say, what about the Hebrews? Why are they here? And Achish said to the other Philistine kings, the other Philistine rulers, by the way, the word melech, doesn't always necessarily necessitate that it be a king. It can also be a word that means ruler in Hebrew. So just because we see the word king or translated as king doesn't necessarily mean that politically it is strictly defined as a king. It can also be used more broadly for ruler or even governor. I think people have argued that the king of Nineveh, I'm doing air quotes, you can't see me do it, but the king of Nineveh may have been simply the governor of the city of Nineveh, not necessarily a king in the monarchical hereditary way that we tend to think of kings. So again, just because a word means something in English doesn't mean that it meant something in Hebrew or Greek, which, forgive me, I'm going to take another aside here, okay? I keep following rabbit trails, but that's one of the most frustrating things that I think I've seen over the years with Bible studies are people see a word and they don't necessarily understand what that word means, or they think that it's like, oh man, there are a bunch of different ways to interpret this word in English, and so they pick out an English dictionary, and then they say, well, what's the word that makes the most sense to me of all the choices in the English dictionary? That's a bad way to do it. Like, that's not the way we do it. You see, the way translation works is the words in the original language, whether it be Greek or Hebrew or Aramaic, they have a range of meanings. And a lot of times, the range of meanings that word has a pretty good overlap with the range of meanings in English, but they're not the same. There are always going to be differences in the range of meanings. So, for instance, in Hebrew, the word melech can mean king, as in a hereditary monarchical ruler. It can also mean a ruler or a governor or the chief leader of a city. Okay, whereas in English, we really don't use it that way. I mean, you could maybe stretch it, but the governor, we would never call a governor a king. Okay, so you can see where there's a lot of overlap between the Hebrew idea of king and the English idea of king. Like, but melech and king are not the same thing, because there's a lot of overlap. There's a lot of this, you know, the Venn diagram overlap. The circles are pretty close to each other, but there are places where they're not the same. And so if you go to an English dictionary and you say, well, what's a king? And you start looking at all the possible different English meanings of the word king, you may come to a conclusion that's bad. Now, you're not likely to do that with the word king, necessarily, okay? But there are a lot of things, especially when we get some more obscure words, especially some certain verbs. Verbs particularly can be difficult about this. What would really behoove you is when you have a word that you're really struggling with and you're not sure what it means, and especially what it means in the context, instead of picking up an English dictionary, I mean, unless you simply don't know what the word means in English, well, then use a dictionary. But what will really behoove you is, if you're looking for an expanded meaning, get a good commentary. You know, get a good commentary. You know, talk to your pastor. Your pastor can help you find these resources. Talk to a pastor, that has, resources, or a pastor who has skills in the original languages. Okay, they're going to help you know what the actual options of the words are, because sometimes, like I said, we look at the options in English and they're actually not viable options in the original language, and we end up drawing wrong conclusions. Okay, sorry, that was a rabbit trail. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about today. Well, maybe tangentially, but not really. Okay, so the kings, the rulers of the Philistines say, you know, we don't want the Hebrews. Basically, that's what they're saying. And Achish says, look, this is David. Isn't this David, the servant of King Saul, who's been with me for quite some time? I found no fault with him from the day of his defection until the present time. But the Philistine rulers became angry. Look, by the way, look at Achish's absolute confidence in David. But the rulers of the Philistines are angry with Achish, and they say, send a man back, send him away. Let him return to the place you assigned to him. Don't let him go down with us into the battle, for he might become our adversary in the battle. What better way to please his Lord than with the heads of these men? Isn't this David of whom they sang as they danced? Saul has struck down his thousands, and David his tens of thousands, or but David his tens of thousands, is how the NIV puts, or the NET puts it. So you have the rulers of the Philistines are saying, we don't trust David. We don't trust him. And why don't they trust him? Because they say, isn't this the David of whom we have heard this refrain, the one they sing about, saying, Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. Now, by the way, we have already heard people talking about that. When we go back earlier in the scriptures, okay, and we see where has that expression been used, okay? Well, it was used earlier when David was before King Achish and he pretended to be insane, right? Saul, they say, isn't this the guy of whom we've heard Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands? Okay, so this expression keeps coming up over and over and over again in the Bible. So what's really fascinating is we have three times we hear this expression. We hear this expression when it's initially sung, you know, and when the refrain galls him, and that happens back in 1 Samuel 18 after David kills Goliath. It happens in 1 Samuel 21 when David flees into Gath, and of course it happens here in chapter 29 when the rulers of the Philistines are saying, well, you can't trust David. David is the one about whom they sing, Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. This is the second time he's been told this. Okay, this is the second time he's been told this about David. But he continues and he says, well, I really trust David. But so he summons him. Achish summons David and he says, as surely as Yahweh lives, he swears by Yahweh. He says, you're an honest man and I'm glad to have you serving with me in the army. I found no fault from the day you first came until the present time. But in the opinion of the leaders, you're not reliable. So turn and leave in peace. You must not do anything that the leaders of the Philistines consider improper. Okay, so again, the rulers of the Philistines recognize David is a real and present danger. David is an accomplished warrior and general, and he has a sizable number of troops with him. Now, we don't know the total number of the troops who fought in the battle on Mount Gilboa. We don't know for sure how many there were, but we do know that there was a sizable number of troops among the Philistines. I mean, the text tells us that they were numbered in the hundreds and thousands. Okay, so we can say that there were, you know, at least hundreds and thousands of them, right? I mean, that's not exactly the most thorough exegesis we can do, but really that's all we know is we know that there are hundreds and thousands of them. Okay, so when we look at this, we see that we look at, although David was relatively small in number, about 600 men are with him, he was a big enough threat that the Philistines thought that he could be enough to turn the tide in war, and they don't want him there. But look at the words of Achish, okay? Look at the words of Achish. As surely as Yahweh lives, you're an honest man, and I'm glad to have you serving with me in the army. David has deceived Achish. He has deceived him. He has lied to him. I don't think that this is morally defensible. I don't think that what David did is morally defensible. I don't think that you can say that his lying and his deceit are okay. Now, if you want to say that, okay, what David did was really no different than what a spy in World War II would do to the Germans, and God had told the Israelites to drive out the Philistines, he had told them to not permit paganism in their land, and the Philistines most certainly were that, and that anything goes in all's fair in love and war. Maybe. I just don't know that I'm ready to go that far. I'm not sure. And David presses the issue. He says, look, what have I done? What have you found in your servant from the day I first came into your presence until the present time that I shouldn't go and fight the enemies of my lord the king? And Achish replied to David, I'm convinced that you're reliable as an angel of God. However, the leaders of the Philistines said he must not go up with us into the battle. So get up early in the morning along with the servants of your lord who have come with you. When you get up early in the morning, as soon as it is light enough to see, leave. So David and his men got up early, and they returned to the land of the Philistines. But the Philistines then go up to Jezreel. So what we have here is David is really pushing the issue with Achish. And it seems to be that David really did want to fight against the Philistines. He was trying to undermine the Philistine army, and he was going to destroy them. Or at least die in the attempt. And like I said, this is a morally, I think morally wrong. Some people may like temper it a little bit and just say morally questionable. But the fascinating thing here is Saul and Achish are foils for each other. Saul hates David because David has slain his thousands, his tens of thousands. So Saul hates him because of what he has done. Both Saul and the Philistines hate David because David has struck down tens of thousands of Philistines. Both Saul and the Philistines think that David is unreliable. Both Saul and Achish, but then you look at Saul and Achish, right? They both swear by Yahweh concerning David. Okay, they both. And Achish has every reason to distrust David, but he trusts him. And Saul has every reason to trust David, and he distrusts him. And they're kind of opposites. They're two kings who are completely deceived about the nature of David, completely fooled about the nature of David. And it's really fascinating to see. Now, I found a couple people who write about this, but I've never heard this preached. And I've only found a real detailed look about them being foils for each other in a couple commentaries that I looked at, and I find it fascinating. I don't know what to do with it yet. This is one of these things that I really need to study more before this would be like a really good sermon. This might be a good good blog entry for me or a good paper to write. But I'm not sure how to preach this. Yeah, I know every Bible study I try to have something that we can look at and we can take away and we can preach. And I think for today, I really want to say something about Achish and Saul. I really do, because God is clearly involved in this. I think that's unmistakable. But to what end, I'm not really sure. I'm not certain. I would love to preach on this. I would love to have something more to say about it, but I just don't. So if you've got ideas, you know, or you want to just talk about it more, you know, stop by the office or we can grab lunch, and that'll be great. I would love to talk to you more about this. But for our takeaway today, for our simple takeaway, I simply want to say that just because David does something, and just because it's for the right thing. I mean, defeating the Philistines was the right thing, but that doesn't mean that anything you do to defeat the Philistines is right. The ends do not justify the means. And I think we're supposed to see that. And that is why God did not permit David to fight against the Philistines in this battle. I don't think God would let him. I do not think God would let David fight against the Philistines in this battle because God did not want David to be an oath breaker. I really don't think he did. I do not think God would permit David to be an oath breaker, because that would look so badly on God. It would look badly on God. And so I think that that's what's happened here. And we need to be careful as Christians. We really do. We need to be careful that we do not let the ends justify the means. We should not fall into deceptive tactics. We shouldn't be dishonest. We need to fight fair, okay? And David was not fighting fair. And I'm glad that God stopped David from fighting unfairly. I really wish that God would stop more Christians from being obnoxious and rude and fighting unfairly. I really wish that more Christians would recognize that the ends do not justify the means. Anyways, that's all we have for today, and I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another one of our wonderful, I'm enjoying these, another one of our wonderful morning Bible studies as we continue to look at David as he sojourns in the wilderness. Thank you. God bless. Bye.